welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm here with Mr. Paul Tooley Sr., and I thought it would be a great show to discuss how things have changed through your lifetime. And I know that our whole family is very interested in education, so of course we're going to hit upon all the different things in education, but with that comes the very beginning. Tell me about your very first memories.
Education to me was something I really was looking forward to. I'm going to be in the first grade. So the game when I was able to get on the school bus and I went to school. It was a public school in Swatara, Minnesota. And it was long before the kids began to make fun of me because they knew I was a Christian. And some of them made quite a bit of fun of me. But it was then, very soon after that, within just maybe a week or so, I fell on a nail because the kids had been playing with me from a family just up the road a ways, and this was in a Minnesota wild country, and I enjoyed having them because I was the last of eight children, and I was by myself with my mom and dad. So when they had to leave home, I got upset, and my brother and father had been working on the roof, and they let some shingle nails fall. As I mentioned, I think I mentioned in a recent program that I got osteomyelitis and couldn't go to school anymore. So I had to stay home with my mom.
So you did homeschooling back in, let's see, what year would have that been?
1936,
one of the first homeschoolers. So what did your mom, did she actually try to teach you some things?
No. Gave me some books and said, look at the pictures.
So your mom just gave you some books and told you to look at the pictures.
Yes, and I did. And then she got me a little blue book on the life of Jesus. And I began to read that, and I began to fall in love with Jesus so
much.
How
did you learn to read, though? Do you remember how you learned to read?
I don't know, except I had access to a Dick and Jane book. That's what the main reading book of those days was, the Dick and Jane book. There was no technical stuff whatsoever, except the light bulb overhead.
Well, yes, light bulb. And even in school, did the public school system give you any books back then?
The teacher once in a while came to my house to ask how my leg was, and she would bring me some books. If I Were Going is the name of one of the books, and it went to different, a story about going to different countries and reading about them. I don't know. I picked up reading pretty quickly and spelling along with it. And
yes,
for that.
No, whenever we need something spelled, call Dad. So that covered your early education. Now, how did your osteomyelitis, how did that progress?
I was sent to the hospital and in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, and the doctor, after some examination, said to my mom, we're going to have to take off his leg. And that was a tough thing.
Yeah.
So I went to the hospital, as I mentioned, and the doctor said my leg had to be amputated, and I went down with my mom to the Anoka, Minnesota camp meeting, and went in a prayer tent there, and I don't know where it came from, but there was a man, I think, called W.A. Spicer. He was a well-known minister, and he prayed for my leg, and I did not have to have it cut off. I still have it today at 82 years of age. Now, one of the things I experienced while being in that hospital was a phenomena that gave me a scare. And that is, I just prayed to Jesus to keep me safe through the night. And I was in a big room with windows all around. And when I looked out the first window, here was a being standing that was just a silhouette of it. It was black, and it would point its finger at me, and light, like light flashes would come from the end of his finger. Then you go to the next window and the next, and I thought, oh, that must be Satan. So I put my head under the covers, and then I'd take it out and look again, and there is the next window, and repeated that until it got clear around the room and then left. I don't know the answer to that to this day, but I know that my experience in that hospital was quite something with the nurses and the people who came to visit me. And for the next 10 years, I was in and out of that hospital. Because after I got out the first time, I was rolling a tire down the road and the tire hit the derrick. That's the thing they were building bridges with, the WPA Workers' Project Association, put on by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And it bounced back, the tire did, and hit my tibia of that same leg and broke it into three parts, and I had to go back to hospital again. And different things like that would happen. But while I was in the home, in between, I was kept reading that book about Jesus. And then we moved over to a farm, and I got to go to school again.
So now and what grade were you in?
I thought I was in the first day I went, I thought I was in the first grade. The second day, I thought I was in the second grade. I thought I went by days to get your grade, but no, they said, don't, no, not that. So anyway, I was in about the third grade. I got to go 39 days that year.
Do you remember how the classroom looked?
Yes, the classroom was very well decorated, and for some reason I was able to do handwriting that was so outstanding, the teacher would have me go up to the board and write on it so that the kids could see what she expected of their writing.
Now, Dad, I have to stop you here because it sounds like you've had a very sketchy education school-wise, and yet you've learned to read, you're now in the third grade, and you've mastered cursive handwriting, which is phenomenal.
Well, I think it is, too, when I reflect back on it. And penmanship has always been the main thing, I think, because my dad and mom, when I brought home my report card, always wanted to look at the penmanship grade first. Apparently, they either saw a special gift in my penmanship or they were proud of it or something, because they always wanted to see penmanship. And now, when the teacher would make up papers, instead of having a nice computer and then a printer print them out and then a duplicator make them, what they did was had called hectographs. It was a jelly-like substance they'd lay in a, like a cookie pan, and it would get kind of like a real stiff jello. And then they could write with a special pencil on the paper, on a paper, and put that down as the pattern. And then after that, they'd peel back page after page and give it to the students instead of offer them a duplicator or a printer.
So you were actually given worksheets. You weren't working off from slates and...
No, we were given worksheets made by a hectograph.
Hectograph.
And you can go online, I think, and probably read about those. Mm-hmm. Some countries may still have them.
So that got you through some of your elementary experience. Now, what happened in your high school?
In my high school, we'd by now moved from Minnesota to Washington State, Sunnyside, Washington. And now for the first time, I was in a church school. Ninth grade in the Sunnyside Church School. And I learned so much about God and Jesus. Yet, because of that early reading of different books from not only Ellen G. White, but also from authors who wrote such books as Our Day in the Light of Prophecy, that this, I could tell the students and teachers some things that they didn't even know. And it made a few students jealous. But I was so happy to be in that. And then when it went, after I got through that ninth grade, they didn't have 10th grade in that school. I had to go over to the Sunnyside High School. And it was fortunate for me that I had a teacher come to the house. I didn't
know. Did you get another spell of osteo or?
No, my mom had cancer by then, and she was concerned that my leg might get kicked or something. And so somehow they worked it out that a teacher came to my house, and she took me through the 10th grade, and I also worked through the Griggs University secondary level.
And so you were home studied. One of the oldest, I think it is the oldest accredited home study institute in the United States.
Yes, I got through that, and that's about where I thought I would end up. And then lo and behold, that same teacher said to my dad, "Aren't you going to let Paul go on to school?" He said, "We can't afford any college or anything like that." So she said, "Here's the form, fill this out, and we'll get him to whatever college he chooses, and it'll all be paid for."
Wow. And
my dad about fell out of his chair, and I thought, wow, I get to go on. So I did. I went to Walla Walla College, which is now Walla Walla University, College Place, Washington. And 4 years I spent there, 5 years, in fact. And all the technology began to come on now.
Okay, well, we have to take a break right now. But when we come back, we'll take you through the rest of your educational experience. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media. You know, be sure and like Education Currents on Facebook, and also consider partnering with us in this educational ministry. You can share your resources or show ideas. My address is P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. Or call me at 301-824-3162.
If you missed part of today's show, you'd like a copy for yourself or to share with a friend, then please go to our website, lifetalk.net, and click the podcast page. All of LifeTalk's talk shows are posted on our site and are free for you at any time. If you don't have an internet connection or you just want a compact disc of today's show, call 800-775-4673 with your credit card ready, because you'll be asked for a small donation to help cover our costs. Also, we'd like to hear what you thought of today's show. Please send us an email, include the title of the show on the subject line, and send that email to office@lifetalk.net. That's office@lifetalk.net.
Welcome back. I'm here with Mr. Paul Tooley Sr., and we are talking about how things have changed over his lifetime. He was one of the first homeschooled students. He also had a public school teacher that came to his home, and she was instrumental in getting him money so he could go on to college. So we were just at Walla Walla College, and you were beginning to learn things that you hadn't really known before, and so take us from there.
Well, I became a freshman. They accepted me at Walla Walla College, and it wasn't long after that that my mom paid her last visit to me, and then she passed away with cancer because of a operation that didn't go well from a previous doctor, and I won't go into the history of that, but anyway, it resulted in her death.
And you were 21 years old?
I was 21 years old. Mm. And it was a kind of a difficult time for me. Mm-hmm. She's buried in College Place, Washington. Anyway, I began to think about, you know, what course I should pursue. And of course, theology was the one I wanted, because her last dying words to me was, we rode along in the backseat of the car, "Paul, stick with theology." So I was going to do that. And I did. I started out in theology and I was going along well, when all of a sudden, something changed. We lost all my records from the registrar office, and then they put the different grades in that they estimated it should be, rather than the actual grades I had gotten. Anyway, I was doing well, and then in about the second year, lo and behold, a government official stopped into the college and wanted to know where I was and tracked me down and said, "How are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, fine. Love theology." "Theology," he said. I said, "Yeah, theology. We can't pay for theology. We can only pay for something close to that, which would be education. If you want to change to education, that's fine." So I did. I'd rather get the support from vocational rehabilitation than not have it. And so I switched to education, and I worked for my master's degree, and we were by now getting a call, and this is interesting, we were getting a call to go overseas, and I was coming close to my termination of the money, that's 4 years of college, and I ran out just near the end, and one day a person stopped by and said to me, "Paul, go to," and he gave me the address in Spokane, Washington, and go to the room and gave me the number and tell them you need some funds. So I did. And lo and behold, they wrote me out a check for the amount I needed and wished me farewell. And I went back and paid it to the college. And then we moved. And I had married now one of the students, Melba Downs, her name was. And we had 4 children, Melba and I. And Dr. Gamblin here, her birth was very doubtful. And I had to wait down in the room while the doctor was trying to get her saved from being an abnormal child. And so Dr. Gamblin now is proof that God worked a miracle right there. Mm-hmm. And anyway, in due course, I got work at a farm in the summer as I was teaching at one of our schools in Cedar Home in Washington State. And while I was on a tractor driving a plow, out of nowhere, a voice said to me, "You've got to go to Africa." And I said, "What?" "Yeah, Leroy is there. That's my Leroy Moore. That was my cousin's, my niece's husband. I want you to go to Africa." And so I didn't pay much attention to it, but the next day at home, I got a call on the phone from the General Conference telling me, where would I like to go as a missionary? They had 2 openings, one in Africa and one in South America, and I took the Africa one. That's a story in itself.
Yes. So you started teaching out of college. What kind of technology did they have then? Because now we're away from the hectograph.
Yeah, now they had computer in the early stages, and it seemed very efficient and simple. And it seems like then the companies that make computers and technology stuff have to add on a little here and a little there to keep selling. Updating. It gets to be quite a difficult thing.
Now, when you taught in Africa, there were no computers.
No, and I think the students
learned,
had a good time.
Yeah, you learned without computers, and then when you came back to the United States and you taught in Brooklyn, there were no computers, and when
That's
you taught
right.
in North Dakota, there were no computers. And when you taught in Texas, there were no computers. Then when you taught in Maryland, I don't know. There might have been computers at Highland View Academy when you taught there.
I think the first school that I actually remember having computers around the room for students to use was the Berkeley Springs School, where you were principal up in Berkeley Springs, West Virginia.
Yeah, and that just seems like yesterday, and it was such a big deal. We got a grant from McKee's Bakery, the owner of Little Debbie's, and they gave us a grant for those computers, and we put computers in the classroom, and we were just, we really felt like we were coming into the 21st century.
It was a great school, and I was retired from teaching, except I was rehired.
Retreaded, yes.
And again, I was, and even after being, I kept on. It's 55 years now in
education. Yes, he's still teaching. So at Berkeley Springs, you actually drove up there and you taught the 9th and 10th grade because you're credentialed. You're still a credentialed teacher, current credentialed teacher, and you are still teaching at Baltimore White Marsh. Explain a little bit. We're kind of coming to the end of the show, but explain a little bit about how you teach at Baltimore White Marsh.
Yes, I got the gift of a Skype from my interviewer here, Dr. Gamblin, and she put it on my computer, and then it sends my face down onto their wall, and we have a great time teaching English. And what I do is I teach for the gist of it. For instance, instead of all of the intricacies involved in every part of speech, I want them to know the parts of speech and what they are and how they do it so that they can formulate the tenses, the times, the complexities of, say, an adjectival phrase and so forth. And the kids, we make some kind of a team effort so that one team can help their classmates out and the other team can help theirs out.
You know, this is a wonderful tool for homeschooling families, for small schools that just have one teacher in many grades, because I know how my students look forward to the Skype class. It's there on the board in the agenda on the days that it happens, and they look so forward to that Skype class. And Mr. Tooley has figured out ways of making it so fun. Everything from paying the kids classroom bucks. We even have games where we toss things from one person to the next under his direction. We have teams. And then they just come to the hot seat when it's their turn. And that way he has a spokesperson up close to the screen that he can hear without all the kids yelling out at one time. When you're trying to do an interactive Skype class, it can be pretty distracting with all the noise and everything, and technology isn't absolutely perfect. Well, we've come to the end of our show. Thank you so much for sharing your life with us.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I appreciate being invited to do so.
I have one last thing to say, and that is keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.